Jack Headley, he's president of the Jack Headley Black Museum, recently acquired the Imperial Hotel. You can learn all about that there in Thomasville. Deputy Dave Teams, Leon County Sheriff's Office will be with us. Nancy Dignon has another My Weather View, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
This first hour of this here very fine radio show, mostly because we have some very fine guests and a very excellent producer, and my job is, you know, just try to stay on point, as you know, is a challenge. And we're endeavoring to inform and inspire, mildly entertain you from week to week in this 2 hours that has now, for its 7+ years, we're in our 8th season, been blessed enough to have some of these folks come our way, people like Jack Headley, who you're going to love getting to know. He's the real deal, brother. He'll be with me in the second hour talking about his organization, the Jack Headley Black History Museum, and how that has all come about. Talk about pulling yourself up by the bootstraps. A lot of very fine people involved in that project, by the way. And this recent acquisition, and really a save for the region and for us as Tallahassee, Thomasville. I mean, you got to understand, I don't see the divisions. I mean, I think of Tallahassee as five counties, okay? Because in reality, if you live in Bainbridge or Crawfordville or wherever you are about us, chances are you're working in somewhere near to or inside of Leon County and likely the city of Tallahassee. Even if that's not true, the cultural vibe that goes on here, the economics, the distribution of population, the demography, yeah, it's characteristic, and what we have to do when I say that is recognize that our diversity certainly goes beyond a few zip codes and goes beyond the county line. And so when you include people in Gadsden and Jefferson and, yes, Thomas and, well, Cola counties, you know, you're looking at people, yes, you're looking at history, you're looking at cultural tradition, you're looking at family histories. You're looking at the things that matter most to most of us. You know, what shapes the way we live our lives here? What do we think is most important? And when we are brought in touch with some of the numbers, the statistics that have to do with some of our neighbors, it's a bit disheartening. And there's been a lot of talk lately, the last few years, and even more recently, the Democrat was good about putting this full page, front page, back here in February, about a month ago or better. And Tamarin Waters did, I thought, a good job. And the title of the article is "These Kids Need a Chance." And there was this summit proposed that would then help folks in the 32304 zip code. Median household income in the 04 is $21,647. Remember, boys and girls, from your statistics classes, there is the mean, the mode, and the median. The mode is the most frequently occurring score. The mean is the arithmetic average of the scores. And the median is simply the middle point. Okay, so what that's telling us is that half of the people living in 04, that is the half of the total population in the 04 zip code, is making less than the $21,647. And yes, that puts them well below the poverty level. Or in an intuitive way, take that number. Take $20,000, divide it by 12. That's what you've got to make work year in and year out. And what's even more insidious about that is the entrenchment. They're stuck. That's what you call an Alice person or family. Asset limited, income constrained, employed. Translates, working people working hard, usually holding down one or two, maybe two and a half jobs, doing everything they can, and yet, man, they're struggling. You know, and there's good news, lots of good news around us. Had the opportunity this week to attend a workshop on the business of the Opportunity Zone plans that are afoot, and this being offered by the Office of Economic Vitality. They did a great job putting it all together. Erin and her crew from Madison Street Strategies, I mean, they just did a great job. Learned a lot about these opportunity zones, as they're described, all having come about rather recently, like within the last couple of years, that monies are now being made available and tax incentives, I should point out, the most critical portion of this, tax incentives for those who have capital gains that they want to invest and thereby lessen their tax liability. It's very simple. You know, you made $1 million last year on your capital gains. Well, you could take that million or a portion of it and you invest it in one of these opportunity zone projects. And we got a bunch of them around Tallahassee. And guess what? You enjoy then the reduction in your tax on that money, especially if you're willing to keep that money there for, you know, 5 or 10 years. So it's really intended to help revitalize, rebuild, or start up businesses that could not only bring economic growth to the community, but could help to redefine the way a neighborhood is known, like the 04 zip code, right? So you have unskilled labor, people who really are doing the best they can with what they have to work with. But what if you set up businesses and programs and such in those neighborhoods? Affordable housing is the low-hanging fruit, I guess, when it comes to ideas. I mean, that's easy to think of. But what about community gardens that are being managed by people who are skillful at growing stuff? Right? And then they take and sell those products through community grocery stores. We call them, neighborhood garden markets. Yeah. And then those groceries can be purchased by those people in those neighborhoods. Could also be made available to restaurants that are looking for farm-to-table sort of opportunities. Yeah. Monies could be allocated in that direction that would help grow this as an idea. Perfect. And you have opportunity for employment, because not only do you have those who are working the field, They're doing what they know how to do and growing food. They are being helped by those who are maybe mid-level skilled, and they're the managers. And then you have people who are the developers. They're kind of at that upper end, but they're also looking for employment. Just an idea. Some of the ideas that came up out of this Opportunity Zone prospectus, Office of Economic Vitality, earlier this week. It's what I love about this town. We're not done yet, folks. We're just getting started. Start thinking about the ways in which you can make your neighborhood a little better. Maybe do a little bit better for yourself and your neighbor. And be sure that you continue to tune in here, because we're going to keep bringing you this information. If you miss any of our shows, you can find us online, TallahasseeTalks.com. Stay with me. Is there anything more Tallahassee than Tasty Pastry Bakery? More fresh, more original, more this is why I love this town kind of delicious? I don't think so. You know, they've been in business since 1963, working through the night to be ready the next morning with muffins, coffee cakes, bread and pastries, and my personal favorite, fresh-made bagels and Lucky Goat coffee. Yeah, it helps get me out in the morning. And they deliver to the many restaurants, clubs, and coffee shops that serve their bread, muffins, and quiche. Never stuffy, never stale. Just Tasty Pastry Good. It's the perfect blend of world-class talent, pure, simple ingredients, and down-home Tallahassee family tradition. Maybe they should call it Tasty Tally Bakery, but then why mess with something that's been working for 55 years? You know, you want something fresh and fantastic? There's a Tasty Pastry just waiting for you in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You want to know more? They're online at tastypastrybakery.com or call them at 893-3752.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Well, here we are with this opportunity in the show. We've got Nancy Dignon here with us again with another My Weather View. We're going to have her weather view in just a moment. Meanwhile, I'm going to bring you a couple of announcements I think you'd find useful, especially from our good friends over there at Leon County. I really like the way Matt handles all of this. Tremendous amount of activity and information that comes by way of the county. This having to do with the good people at Leon County Libraries. And maybe you're one of those that are a regular patron of the library locations around town. And this is a great resource for you and I. You know, and there's all kinds of places around these branch locations that are convenient. You know, you got little places where you can pick up a cup of coffee or whatever. So you got the Woodville branch, and you've got what else? The East Side branch over there on Pedrick, and they've got a little Pedrick Pond Park. How cool is that? Do a little walk around the pond and hang out there at the library. Paid for by you and me. Let's see, I'm leaving out some other locations. Yeah, there's the Fort Jane G. Saul's Fort Braden branch. You can find these online, but in any case, and there's, of course, the main library downtown. Well, they got lots of neat activities coming up. Let me see here. What was I going to tell you about? The Book is Better Book Club, being hosted by Main Library downtown. It's got a new meeting time, 11 a.m., and a new venue, the Opesh Mignon downtown location. No purchase is necessary. So if you enjoy books and movies, especially books made into movies, this is for you. The book club meets on the fourth Tuesday of each month, a new time, 11 a.m. So fourth Tuesday, 11 o'clock, Opesh Mignon downtown. You can check it out, no pun intended. And let's see what else we got going on here. Oh, I know what it was. The Maglab. Maglab presents Science Night at the library, so you can enjoy hands-on science activities every third Thursday at the main library. Program offered by the Maglab, designed for first through fifth grade students. Come on, Mom and Dad, this is a good thing. Take your youngster down there to the library and hang out with the brilliant people who are our very own MagLab. World famous they are, all these people. Well, they're geniuses. I know you're not used to that around here, but they are. They're the real McCoy. All right. Well, anyway, there's a lot of more stuff going on. Leon County also announcing that they've expanded their PACE program to include commercial properties. So this is a program that for years has helped residential property owners, now being made available to commercial properties. And that means that they have some low-cost funding available to them that they can repay through their property tax bill. It helps you upgrade your building with weatherization, renewable energy, and all that kind of good stuff. Energy efficiency, PACE program now available to commercial properties. All right, well, it's time for another My Weather View with Nancy Dignon.
Hi, I'm Nancy Dignon, and this is My Weather View for this week. I've had a lot of folks ask me, you know, what's the difference between weather and climate, and why does the weather change so fast? So you kind of said that when you asked me the question. I always say to folks, you know, weather is a picture. Weather's a snapshot. Think of climate as the movie. Weather is really just a picture of what's going on right now. So it may be cold or it may be hot. It may be raining. Half an hour later, it may not be. But whatever is happening at that given moment, at that precise moment, at that particular location, that's weather. Climate, on the other hand, we take all that weather information into it, but we average it. And we do that not for just one day, one week, one season, one year. We do it for as many years as we have collected those weather data. So right now in Tallahassee, they've been collecting weather data since the late 1800s. We average it all up, and that's where you guys hear things like, oh, you know, the average high temperature in Tallahassee is 74, the average low is 42. They took whatever that date was, the high temperature, the low temperature, they added it up for all of the years they have those numbers, and then they divided by the number of years, and that's how they come up with it. So then the conversation segues to, why does the weather change so much? Because that's the nature of weather. It is the constantly changing state of the atmosphere. So think about when you woke up. I am quite certain if we're in the afternoon hours, it was much colder in the morning hours, and it'll be much colder in the evening hours. Of course, the opposite would be true. It changes all the time. The Earth is rotating, we get heating, and then we get cooling, depending on what time of the day it is. And so we experience those changes. All those changes comprise the weather. And so Weather Channel makes a lot of money because they're giving you the current state of the atmosphere. They're showing you exactly what's going on. And if there are changes, they're telling you that as well. Now, climate, on the other hand, we've had some conversations about, well, is there a changing climate? Yeah. You know, and it's not because we saw one winter that was cold or one winter that was warm or even 2 years where we had cold winters or hot summers or whatever the statement may be. It's because there's a trend. That trend has to occur over a significant number of years. So let's say for the last decade, 10 years, maybe the average temperature in the summer months has been a little bit higher than what it typically is. We're not going to say, oh, that's it. All of a sudden, we're going to be incredibly hot in the summer months. We're going to keep watching and keep monitoring. And if it's a continuous trend, then we start to make those statements. And we're seeing that. You know, for the last decade, we've seen periods of, you know, busy hurricane seasons. And so we keep, you know, track of all of that. We make those kinds of statements that we're seeing these busy seasons. We're seeing winters where the temperatures haven't been quite that cold. And yes, I know if it's cold in the morning when you wake up, oh, it's the coldest winter ever. Nah, it's just maybe a cold day for you. You have to go back. I remember last year, I don't even think I remember wearing a jacket. You know, and I'm a Yankee by, you know, being born in New York, but, you know, I just don't remember it being very cold for any significant periods of time. And I know we try to get around it. And of course, prior to that, there have been many years where, you know, there are jackets and, you know, it's been for a long period of time. So it's got to be a trend, not just for a handful of years, but for a longer term where we can actually say, you know what, we are seeing a change in our climate. We're noticing some changes. And when you continue to notice it, then yeah, I think you have to agree that we've got a change in climate. Is the weather changing? Yes, it's supposed to. It changes all the time. It'll change tomorrow morning when you wake up versus when you went to sleep. So the difference between the two is think of weather as the picture, the snapshot, and then think of climate as the movie, the long-term trend. This has been My Weather View for the week. I'm Nancy Dignan.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Deputy Dave Teams began his career with Leon County Sheriff's Office in 2003. Let's welcome Deputy Dave Teams. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Said earlier you have a degree in broadcast journalism from FAM.
I attended Florida A&M University. I lived on campus there for a couple of years while I was going to school. Through that, was able to get an internship at a local TV station and worked my way up to a full time job with them. And then you just don't want to do that for very long.
So when you were at FAM and here you are majoring in journalism, broadcast journalism, was there somewhere in the back of your head this idea that you would end up in law enforcement?
No, not really. You know, when I came out of high school, you think to yourself, what, and as idealistic as you possibly can at 18 years old, what can I do to help my fellow man? What can I do? What is the best way that I can go out and help people? That's where I was at. You know, but when you get out, that's what you try to decide. So that's where I was at. You know, what can I do to make my impact on the world? I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And for me, that was my two options kind of coming out. Like, what's going to be the best way for me to be able to make that impact? And I chose to go into the media. I was able to get a scholarship to go to Florida A&M University.
Right.
Loved my time there. I still have dear friends that I had that were roommates and stuff like that when I was there. And after doing local media for about 7 years, I moved around a lot as a kid. And to really make your mark in broadcast journalism, you have to move a lot.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to do that anymore. So I decided to go with option B, which I fell in love with immediately.
Which was law enforcement.
Law enforcement.
And at that, Leon County Sheriff's Office.
You know, when you
did they come looking for you, or did you get busted? I mean, what happened?
You know, when you look at local law enforcement and how things go, and there's nothing against anybody else that does law enforcement in town. There's just a family environment that goes on at the sheriff's office that when you go in and you become a member of that family, it's just so inviting. And
there's
it just
a brotherhood,
there's so much to
sisterhood
do.
Kind of thing,
Well, just even beyond that, we take care of each other, but we also do a very good job of taking care of the community. We always have. I mean, I've been there since 2003. And it's always been something that's been at the forefront of everything we've done.
So it's a good fit for you personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to sit down, because in my job, I had the opportunity to sit down with the heads of about 3 or 4 different agencies in town just through interviews. And the funny thing is my boss now was the boss over at the police department when I was looking to make this decision.
That's right.
Got the chance to talk with everybody, and just, you know, my interactions with the sheriff's office at that time just told me that's where I needed to be.
That's right.
And so that was my decision.
Yeah. And you certainly have, been involved at a lot of different levels and in a lot of different areas of service. I like this mention here too, that you were a member of Leon County Sheriff's Office Honor Guard, and continued to serve in that capacity. Started that in 06, and then in 2015, you were fortunate enough to lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns in Arlington National Cemetery in honor of Deputy Chris Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Who was killed in the line of duty here some years ago. Wow.
You know, I didn't know Chris very well when Chris was here. At that point, I was a detective. Chris had come here for a few years as a deputy.
Right.
We'd seen each other in the hallways a few times. But to see someone that makes that sacrifice, to see what happens, how it affects not just the agency, but a community as a whole. You know, and Tallahassee and Leon County has always been, you know, a small community with big city feel to a certain extent.
Sure.
And to see, you know, a rainy night at Dick Houser Stadium that's completely packed for a candlelight vigil. When it's raining so hard you can barely see the stage that's 50 feet in front of you. Just, and I'm thinking about it now, and it gives me chills.
I imagine.
So, but we got the opportunity as part of the Honor Guard to go out and lay a wreath. They do these wreath laying ceremonies all the time up there, but to go out and it's been one of the more surreal experiences. You know, when you're 20 feet away from the sarcophagus that's there at the Tomb of the Unknowns, and to understand what that means and go out, it's one of the biggest honors of my life.
Life changing, I would imagine.
It was for me.
Yeah.
Town. There's so much to experience in this town and the Big Bend as a whole. You know, there's so much to experience in Leon County that, you know, if you've never been to Bradfordville Blues Club.
Hard to say.
Yeah, it can be. But, you know, if you've never been, go experience
that. Go do that.
Yeah. It's one of the most amazing things you can do in town to get out there and just see this little cinder block building.
It is. And historic, for that matter.
Absolutely.
Right? That's part of our fabric, isn't it? You know, this relationship, challenges that this community has had to tackle, just like every other town. What's it like for you? When you're out there dealing with the public at large, and you're trying to be everybody's friend, you've got everybody's backside, we'd say. Mm-hmm. Gets tough sometimes.
Well, you know, and that's a thing that with us at the sheriff's office, we've got a good history of being able to relate with everyone that's going on. You know, whether it's good, bad, indifferent, you've always got, you know, we've always been able to relate with people. To go through and be able to be fair. And I think that's all you can really ask of law enforcement is to treat everybody the same.
Well, it seems to me that especially locally, and I think it's true nationally, a lot of smaller groups, smaller towns, law enforcement, trying to put more of a face on what is going on. And so not being the enemy of the people, but rather trying to be a bit more human, more engaged, more in touch. I mean, I'm looking at your website, and you got tweets here and videos and stuff, and it's, you know, it's not about nailing bad guys. It's about taking care of people. So that's definitely a different message, let's say, than what we might have seen a decade ago or better.
Well, you know, with the sheriff's office and things that we've done, we've always, and Sheriff McNeil will be the first person to tell you that, you know, with our All-In initiative that we started when he got here, that's nothing new with us. We've always been a part of the community. We've always reached out to the community and made sure that if there was something that needed to be taken care of that we could help with, that we did that. The only thing that we did once Sheriff McNeil got here was we started to label it. We campaigned it better. We put a face to it. We put a name to it to go out and like, hey, we want everybody to be all in with us as part of the community. And it's something that we've always done. It's just that we're, for lack of a better way to put it, we're marketing it better. We're getting it out to the community and making sure that they're buying in with what we're doing as well.
Right. I'll tell you that from my own personal experience, I've been in town here 40 years. I've had a few occasions when the good people with the sheriff's office have had to pull me aside and, you know, remind me to be wearing my seatbelt or whatever, and
have small conversations.
I just, you know, just a chat. And I've had the same course with the city. I have to say, with the county, the message was, we're really trying to make sure you don't hurt yourself, you don't hurt anybody else, and we're more concerned about the outcome long term than we are about busting you here at the moment. And I'll tell you, I mean, funny story for me, coming home, and like most people, once you're within 5 miles of your house, you're breaking every rule. You're breaking out of your lane. You know, you're not signaling. You're not doing anything. I know how to get there. I can get there from here. And deputy just sitting there waiting for me to make it up to where he was, kind of waved me over, pulled me aside, rolled down the window. He came over and he said, look, man, you're not wearing your seatbelt. You were doing over the speed limit in this neighborhood. You broke out of your lane. You got to get it all together. I mean, those are his words. And I said, Deputy, you're absolutely right. I will never do it again, I promise. And he looked at me like, yeah, I hadn't heard that before. But his message was clear. He said, you know, start doing right, and please do not make me have to pull you over again. So there was this sort of curative attitude about, do I really have to hold your hand to get you to do what you know is the right thing to do? That registered with me. That really carried a lot of weight for me, more so than if, you know, hey, here's your ticket, you know, see you later, pal. So I think that level of engagement, I'll call it, commitment to the positive outcome for everybody, has been the hallmark for this organization.
You know, I've always looked at my job as educational. What's the best way to get the message across? Because our job in the long run is to make sure this community not only is safe, but feels safe. And I think those can be two different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, their crime rate, be what it may, the biggest factor of that is, do people feel safe where they're at? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing. So when we talk about being educational, I want to make sure that the message gets across. And then with some people, it gets across with a quick, hey, you know, let's talk about this for a moment. What are you thinking? Is it that just that moment you've had? Is this a long-term thing? You look at history a little bit if you can. Has this person had a lot of tickets? Mm-hmm. And we try to take that into account. At least I have. Mm-hmm. And if, have they gotten tickets? Is it something we need to continue to have a conversation? There's some people that learn with just a talking to. Hey, I know you're close to the house, but let's get this all the way there, because most accidents take place within 5 miles of the house.
Absolutely true. Talking with Public Information Officer for Leon County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Dave Teams. You stay with me. We got more.
Children are curious and eager learners. Young children learn best when they experience life firsthand in play. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program knows how to spark their innate desire to find out, figure out, and solve problems through the course of everyday events. Their teachers provide the expert guidance children need to capture and extend their natural eagerness to learn. If you want your child to learn and grow in a safe environment that promotes lifelong learning, call FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program today, or visit them online at childcare.fsu.edu. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program, working together to provide every child with a rich learning environment. Call today, 850-644-7970. 850-644-7970.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with Dave Teams. You've done some of that work, too, in relation to the law enforcement liaison for the Northeast Florida chapter of Concerns of Police Survivors. Tell us about that organization and your work.
Sure. So the Concerns of Police Survivors is an organization. It's a national organization that started in 1984. The widows and surviving family members of law enforcement officers that were killed in the line of duty showed up for National Police Week, and they were trying to figure out, and this is, you know, that the one of the founding members tells the story this way, that the cops that are there for National Police Week honoring those that had died didn't know what to do with them. Mm. What do we do? We've got all these widows here. What do we do? Mm. They got together and they decided that they would decide their own fate. What are we going to do with this? How do we best bring this delight to understand, help people understand what they go through? So they've broken into national chapters. So Northeast Florida is from Leon County over to Duval County, down towards Gilchrist County. Mm. And the biggest thing that they do is they provide services to family members. You know, if an officer's killed in the line of duty, you know, specifically here in town, you know, when Chris was killed, Erica had one person in town that kind of understood her experience, and that was Dale Green's wife. Mm. You know, Erica's children and Chris's children didn't have a peer in town that they could sit and talk with that was their age to say, hey, I'm feeling this way. So they have these national conferences and these retreats that they can go to, and they send for free. They send these families to help them understand, make them feel normal. Hey, this is okay. You know, I'm 12 years old. I lost my dad. I'm 12 years old. I lost my mom. It was the same kind of a situation. And while it's unique to each individual person, you at least know that there's someone else that's going through that, and you can help normalize it and become normal and get to that point again.
It's almost like a PTSD sort of scenario where you've got this horrible trauma that comes into your life, and now you're left to try to deal with it.
And it's exactly what it is. You know, what do you do? What's normal for me now? Yeah. And, you know, because everything gets upended. Mm. You know, you just, there's so many things that in the past with law enforcement agencies, what's kind of happened is the funeral happens, the widow's put out in front, the children are put out in front, and the police chief, the sheriff, hands a flag over. And when that's done, what happens? What happens from that point forward? You know, we always tell them, hey, you're always going to be a part of our family. And those are words, but what happens at that
point? What does that mean?
What becomes beyond that? Yeah. And cops is a way that you kind of continue to prove that. We go through, we help agencies deal with that part of it. You know, Leon County had not lost an officer since the early 1900s when Sheriff Langston was killed in the line of duty.
I remember.
And it had been, you know, it had been that long. So we're still trying to cope with that. How do we cope with it? I mean, I was in violent crimes at that time. I spent 16 hours on a scene where someone that did the same thing that I do was killed doing what they do. So on top of trying to help with an investigation, I'm also trying to deal with where am I at? What am I going to do?
And that close-knit family of law enforcement at the county sheriff's office speaks to that, doesn't it? Because when you lose someone in the line of duty, I mean, that is a family member that you've lost along with the rest of us. And because it doesn't happen that often, perhaps it's even more impactful. I mean, we're just, I think, maybe less prepared for that possibility, even though it's always out there.
Well, it's the horrible truth that you know, always know in the back of your mind, you know, when you leave the house. You know, my parents are aware that when I go to work, I mean, right now I don't answer calls, but they know that because I wear this uniform, I still respond to things and something could happen, that I may call them in the morning and then I may not be there in the afternoon. And, you know, it's always in the back of your mind, but it's always that part that you just, you know and wish doesn't happen. So you just kind of push it away as much as you possibly can until you have to deal with it.
Well, and on a national scale, we've seen an increase, it seems to me, in the deaths among law enforcement and sort of random, senseless sort of things. And we talked to Damon Miller about it, too, recently, and what law enforcement has had to do and is doing to try to protect one another. So, you know, it's clear that when there is a call, you're not running solo. Most of the time I'll see somebody, even at a traffic stop, there'll be one or maybe two others that are right there on the scene. And that's just part of the strategy, isn't it?
Well, and it's just about making sure you have the numbers that you need. Because when you pull a car over, we don't know if we're going to get that guy that's just trying. He's 5 minutes from his house, and he's trying to get to where he's going.
Like me.
Like you. Or is it a guy that, or a girl that is, you know, had just picked up a load of something somewhere, and they realize that this is the fifth time they're getting arrested for something, and they don't want to deal with the consequences and what's going to happen.
Or you run the plates, and we got a real problem here.
So you just never know, and that uncertainty is, and you know, I've had it before where you pull somebody over and someone gets out with you, and you want to explain. And I think, you know, when it comes to talking with people, you want to explain to that person when you come up, hey, there's a second officer here, but he's just here for my safety. We're not concerned about you as much as we just want to make sure that there's no other issues going on. So,
had an incident recently with a friend in South Florida, and she was driving her son to a mental health facility, needed some help. And somehow 911 was notified and the word gun came into the conversation. So when she got pulled over, she had several folks with guns drawn saying, out of the car. It freaked her out, and they apologized because they found out, no, there wasn't any gun involved, but that got included in the call, the report. When that kind of stuff happens, people can do all kinds of crazy things that they might not have otherwise if they, you know, right? You come into that situation and all the adrenaline's going on both sides.
Right.
And so your first intent, I suppose, would be what? To calm everybody down here. That's not easy to do.
You know, I think that we dictate most situations when it comes to how we address it. And when it comes to, you know, if you talk with someone in a calm, even voice, yeah, you're going to have to be stern sometimes. You're going to have to project and make sure they understand that you're being serious. But as long as you are calm about it, I think 90%+ of what we deal with, that person's going to at least understand, okay, they don't sound like they're excited. Let's go through. And I think that's where training makes a big difference. You know, we do something called the gauntlet, where we put people in, and it's a four-cornered room. People come running in one at a time, and it's a situation. You don't know what it is. Someone comes in, you deal with it. It could be anything from someone walking by you going to the store asking for directions all the way up to someone coming in pulling a weapon on you. You walk in dressed like I'm dressed today, duty belt, uniform, and you deal with whatever's in front of you. And I think that's important to get that kind of training, so it helps that you see things on the front end in a safer environment so you can be more calm
so
when
you
things
have
happen.
In the back of your mind a scenario that you've already sort of memorized. You know, okay, these are my reactions that I'm going to pull from should that happen in real life. Yeah,
yeah. It's the ability to be able to understand that things are unpredictable, and as long as you're calm with it and you have your wits about you and can think about it calmly, you're gonna be all right.
So here's my last question for you. If you weren't doing this now, would you go back into doing television and broadcast?
If I could focus on sports, yes. That's the only thing
you're looking
I miss.
For that Espen gig. I get it.
Yeah. If I could do.
Do you want to be in front or behind the camera, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters at this point. I do enjoy sports. If I could follow, I'm actually from South Florida, so if I could follow my Hurricanes around, I'd be happy.
Well, there you go. Well, hopefully we can keep you on board. We don't want to lose you. So
I've got a few years left.
Let's see if get those people over there at the sheriff's office to be nice to you. Don't want to lose a good man. He's doing his job. Let's encourage him to keep on, folks. Good friend of this community who for many years has been serving the good people of Leon County and thereabouts. Deputy Dave Teams. He is the public information officer for Leon County Sheriff's Office. Our guest this morning, Dave. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it,
folks. That's what I have for you here at the moment. Stay with me. We got the second hour coming up. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Have you heard about TallyConnection.com? These are the folks who bring us all of the events and activities going on around town. It's a great little spot. TallyConnection.com. Go to that particular blog. You can find out everything you want to know about fundraisers and kids' activities and festivals and concerts. It's all there. Brought to you by FSU Credit Union. And they make it possible for us to bring you Tallahassee Talks every week. So we like the fact that we're working together. We even have a link to their TallyConnection.com site on our website under Community. So there's a good way to find them. TallyConnection.com. Visit this week. Find out more about what you love about this town. Events and activities, all to make your life a little bit better.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're in the second hour. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, your humble host, along with some very expert professional guidance. Carl, also known as King Cabba, and a number of other monikers that he's carried along with him through the years. But King Cabba is probably the most notable. Brilliant fella he is. He, along with a host of other folks here, make this show come together for you. We've been doing it for going on now our eighth season we are, and having a blast doing it, meeting people like Jack Hadley. He's going to be with me here in a few minutes. I had Deputy Dave with me in the first hour, Deputy Dave Teams with Leon County Sheriff's Office. Learning a lot then about the interface between locals, residents, business owners, and law enforcement. A lot of effort being made there to try to encourage a friendlier relationship, a more trustworthy relationship between citizens and law enforcement. And Deputy Dave doing his part. He's their information officer. If you missed that portion of the show, or you have missed any of our shows, you know that you can go online. TallahasseeTalks.com is the place. Search the archive. Find the show you're looking for. You could write in Deputy Dave, and it would bring it up there for you. You can listen at your leisure. Good place, too, to subscribe to the podcast. Yeah, now you're set, man. Get the podcast loaded to your phone, and it's being updated, and I'll always be with you. I know that's just bringing tears to your eyes. So I mentioned this opportunity zone program that I attended earlier in the week. I was talking about it in the first hour. This particular a workshop provided by the Office of Economic Vitality, going through that prospectus, this booklet, laying out these various opportunity zones as they're referred to For example, the Greater Frenchtown area, FAMU Central, Greater Southside. There are, opportunity zones that are, there's one called the Brownfield Incentive Area. All of these are focused on one central point, and that is that it's easy enough for investors to pass by and not be incented because, after all, people who have money to invest are looking generally to get the best out of their investment, return on investment, ROI. That's kind of how it works. And so if you have an opportunity for them to invest with you, well, they're going to want to know, yeah, well, what are you doing? And if your plan is to, let's say, revitalize a building, and you're going to remodel this building in a part of the community where not a whole lot is going on. So you're stepping up to the plate with a couple of strikes against you. Just real tough to secure that kind of investment. You know, who's going to take that risk with you? So the federal program that is now being administered across the country through the state programs and down locally then says, okay, well, we're going to give you additional incentive. So yeah, you know, you want a return on your investment. We got that. But in the meantime, you're going to have an upfront saving on your tax liability. And it can be substantial. 5%, I think, is the initial. And then another 10% if you maintain your investment with that particular project. So let's imagine that you want to create some low-income housing opportunities. Well, you're going to need capital. You got to buy those homes that are going to be remodeled, rebuilt, or you're going to build from the ground up. Whatever you're doing, you got to have some money. Where are you going to get that money? Well, lenders typically, they're not going to stand with you in that because there's too much risk involved. And risk exposure is the buzzword, right? And so here comes the program under this Opportunity Zone Project umbrella. And it says, look, man, we'll help you find those lenders. We'll help you put together your investment prospectus. I mean, there were people there involved with the SBA and various other organizations. They help you write your business plan, doing everything they can to make this work. And I would point out that if we are going to take a step back with me just a minute, if we are going to consider that Tallahassee is more than a few zip codes and more than a few wealthy landholders, stakeholders, if Tallahassee is more than a handful of siloed resources, if we are a people who collectively can create for ourselves a way of life, a community that is noteworthy, everything from the celebrations and festivals to the science and technology, to the way we use resources, both natural and human. Yeah. So Tallahassee, we're here. We got it going on. It's time for us to go a step further. And one of the ways in which that's happening is through a comprehensive plan update. Leon County government is asking for you and I to step up. The city of Tallahassee, Leon County, will host a series of meetings to gain input from the community about the land use and mobility elements of the Tallahassee-Leon County Comprehensive Plan. What is that? Well, the Comprehensive Plan effectively provides the blueprint for growth and development. Catch that. Yeah, infrastructure, buildings, social programs, all the kinds of resources that many of us take for granted, like library systems and parks and recreation, all of it. All of these open house workshops will take place from 6:30 to 8, every one of them. And I got a list of locations. Now, They are the Jack McLean Community Center, Bradfordville Community Center, Fort Braden Community Center, the Dorothy Spence Community Center, Community Room at Amtrak Center, and Tallahassee Senior Center. Those are all the locations. They're starting through, continuing on through this coming Thursday the 14th, and then the next one is at on April 2nd, which is a Tuesday. So some of these have already passed. Maybe you were in attendance. Now, on Monday the 18th, Community Workshop on Proposed Objectives, Goal 1, Places Where People Want to Live, Work, and Play, that will happen. And they are going to be having an additional workshop on the 26th of March, again on the 3rd of April. All of that to tell you, you need to get involved. And the way you can do that, go to the website. Check it out. LeonCountyFL.gov/planning. I'll tell you again. LeonCountyFL.gov/planning. Make it known what you think we ought to do with where we're going, who we are, and how we want to be known. Stay with me.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
The Negro Motorist Green Book, at times styled the Negro Motorist Green Dash Book, or titled the Negro Traveler's Green Book, refers to an annual guidebook for African American road trippers, commonly referred to simply as the Green Book. There's a popular film you would probably have heard of, and this happened from 1936 to 1966, and it was during that era of Jim Crow laws, although pervasive racial discrimination and poverty limited black car ownership, the emerging African-American middle class were buying up cars as quickly as they could. The problem was they faced a variety of dangers and inconveniences along the road. I mean, and this could range from being refused lodging and food to some arbitrary arrest, being accused of stealing a car, whatever. So, Victor Hugo Green, in response, wrote this guidebook to provide safety and direction for those who were traveling. It would point out there were services and places where they could stay that were relatively friendly to African Americans, and eventually his work expanded to much of North America. Among those properties listed in the Green Book is the Imperial Hotel, located in Thomasville, Georgia. It stands today as testimony to that time, an era when discrimination, segregation was widespread and open. It so happens that rather than fall upon a darker and ultimately troubled future, the Imperial Hotel has been saved. And it's happened largely because of the work of one man, Jack Hadley. Formerly, James Jack Hadley, but to his friends, Jack is the one person among many who have taken up this charge in saving the Imperial Hotel. He is our guest this morning, and it's a pleasure to have you with us, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine.
All of 82 years young, I understand.
There you go. 82 years young and feel good at this age.
You have brought this to our attention as a community in recent days, but the fact is this is a lifelong work for you, or at least a work of many years in which you have labored not just in relation to the Imperial Hotel, but all of your work with the museum that you founded and now are the curator, the Jack Hadley Black Museum. Tell us about the museum and its history.
One thing about the Black Jack Hadley Black Museum, it didn't start overnight. It's been about a 40-year journey that I've been on.
Wow.
And I said this because this journey really started back in 1979 when I was stationed, Lindsay Air Station, Wiesbaden, Germany. I'm a military veteran, retiree of 28 years in the Air Force. Mm. We were stationed over at Lindsay Air Station, Wiesbaden, Germany, and my three young kids was going to a Department of Defense school that was taught by Americans, that they was teachers, you know, contract teacher at school. My son came home one day and said, "Dad, this is Black History Week, and the teacher don't seem to have no interest in Black history." And what I did, right then, I got off the sofa, and we put together exhibits from Ebony Magazine, Jet Magazine, and the Pittsburgh Courier paper. Those papers are the one that you would get being overseas in Germany or any place in Europe. You didn't hear much about the Black, what's going on back in the world, we call it. So you subscribe for that so you stay abreast of what's happening. So we put together the collage, and my son Jim took it to school, about three or four sections of it, and the teachers liked it. The students liked it. Then I realized what I did, that we put together. Then I asked my commander if we could also in the squadron celebrate Black History Week. So my commander told me, said, "Jack, you guys go ahead on and use the day room and set everything up." And so we notified all the airmen, you know, in the squadron, the female and male, and made the announcement. I'm in a first combat communication squadron, so when we went on remote locations in North Africa and Middle East, we would be the first ones in and the last ones out. So we took advantage of those little privileges to go and shop around down in those small village
right,
until the main part of the base get there, and then that's in that. They have put rules on. So anyway, that's how they obtain stuff out of North Africa and different places. So they pull that, we all put it together into the day room and fix it up. And that was the beginning of it in Germany. Wiesbaden, Germany. After about a couple of years doing that, then I transferred back to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and stationed at the base there because it's closed today. They closed several years ago. And I saw that there was a lack of Black History Week being you know, exhibit. So I got the people involved with that. And then I retired in 84 and came back to Thomasville. That's my home, Thomasville, Georgia, where I was born and raised at. Finished high school there. And I dealing with Black history. And then one of my deacons in the church, Tommy Gable, he said, "Jack," he said, "look like you're interested in collecting Black history. I like church history. Why don't we do something in the basement of the church, set up an exhibit?" And we did that. I got more posters and prints and stuff like that. We put them on a concrete wall, use masking tape and stuff like that to exhibit. And then I guess the community caught on what I was trying to do, because I felt that back in that time, we're talking about back in the 80s or the early 90s, Blacks was not, they were reluctant to show their Black faces on the walls of the museum, because I could tell by people just not getting involved. So then the Thomasville Center for the Arts found out, what they call the culture center at the time, that what we were doing. So then Black History stretched into a whole month now. They said, "Jack," he said, "if you guys want to use the culture center, which seats about 500 people, and then had up and downstairs the exhibit room, y'all can do so in the basement and set up the exhibit for the whole month and use the culture center for the whole month." They call it today the Center for the Thomasville Center for the Arts. And we did that. And it just mushroomed. People started donating, and I started creating. And that really was beginning with the church here in America with less than 100 pieces, right up to the Culture Center was the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. And then the Culture Center changed directors. A new director came on board, said, we're going to redo the green room on the lower level where you had to exhibit. So we're going to take you up. You can go up on the third floor. This is a big old school that was built back in 1901 and had wooden windows all the way around. And I said, no, I can't do that. It's too much mm-hmm. light exposure to my collection for the whole month. So I just discontinued on the Culture Center. Mm-hmm. And then the school started calling me. The organization started calling me to bring and set up my exhibit to different places. I did that.
Wow. Well, and folks, if you're looking for some motivation, you found it. This morning we've got Jack Hadley here, and we're going to get the story on this Imperial Hotel that you've recently purchased. You stay with me, folks. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we've got Jack Hadley here talking about the Imperial Hotel, its significance as one of those along the Chitlin Circuit, as it was known back in the day, when African-American artists were not allowed to perform except in certain locations. Our own Bradfordville Blues Club is an example. The Imperial Hotel then was the place for African-American bands and musicians to stay during that period of time, all the way from the 40s through the 60s. And I'm sure that if the walls could speak, they would be able to tell us about people like Ray Charles and Cannonball Adderley and all kinds of folks that probably made their way through the Imperial. The location of the hotel where it stands is its original spot, and it's kind of cool because it's right there sort of at the gateway into downtown Thomasville, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah. Now, this has been quite a journey. Tell us a little bit about how you've gotten this far.
Yeah, let me go back before we touch on that piece.
Uh-huh.
The Imperial Hotel came up back in 2013 when there was a conversation with we had a museum assessment program of the museum. I got about 5,000 items on the wall of the museum.
Wow.
Exhibits. And we cover anywhere from slavery, Jim Crow era, blacks in the military, Buffalo Soldiers, Dr. Martin Luther King, the civil rights, black women's made a difference, movies.
Tuskegee Airmen.
World War I, World War II. We got sports, musicians, Jack Robinson, Mac Robinson, who's my brother-in-law, Jack's brother. We got, like I mentioned, Jim Crow. We got poets and writers. So, collect a local history, collecting all of this. So we decided to get a museum assessment person to come in and sort of assess our museum and tell us what most important thing we should do and sort of rephrase our mission. Came in, she rephrased the mission. We need to be focusing more on local history. And she said, y'all need to be more visible downtown. And so the Imperial Hotel came up then, but I put a deaf ear to it because of the fact that I knew I couldn't afford to buy the hotel and get it started. So we put it in back burner, but there were other people who still had interest. Brian Renyon from the Thomasville Landmarks. And then we got Mary Lawrence Lane, who's with the current Landmarks. But through my grant writer, Marilyn Amon, who's been with me, writing grants for me for the past 20 years, Marilyn came on board. She's been writing it. So she encouraged me to move forward with the Positive Risk Theater. I said, no, we need to wait. But all of a sudden, one of my board members, Don Sims, he heard a conversation downtown, I guess, that the owner wants to sell the Imperial Hotel. So he came back to the board and told us, I said, well, go tell him if you're going to give it to us, we'll take it. But the owner, he came back at the next meeting and said, no. He said, he'll sell it to us. He said, he'll sell it to us for 40 grand. I said, I ain't got no 40 grand to buy no hotel. But within a week, the community came together, the Tommy's of Landmarks, the Williams Family Foundation came together and challenged the $20,000 for us to purchase it. And we purchased that hotel. And so it was like a gift sitting in my hand. Then.
So they basically challenged others to contribute.
They challenged each other themselves.
Yeah.
To come up with the initiative for the hotel. So we purchased a hotel. And with no plans. Here I got a hotel, never thought that I would own. But then I realized what I was getting into. Then I said, my nephew, Eugene Weatherspoon, said, Jack, Uncle Jack, you need to buy that little shotgun house next door. If you don't, somebody could come and put a little hot dog stand there or either buy it, and then you won't have no parking space. So I talked to another foundation, and she gave me the money to buy that. And then another one gave me some money to buy to help stabilize it. So within less than a month, I received $80,000.
That's remarkable. And all of this has happened just recently. I mean, within
last March, April, during last year.
About a year.
So we moved forward with that, and then everybody said, what you going to do with it? So we had to come up with some plan. We still don't know exactly, but we said we're going to use it since the city of Thomasville got a comprehensive plan for 2028. And that is on the gateway coming into Thomasville. We said we'll use the lower unit. It's an 8-bedroom hotel upstairs, and then they got bedroom, they got office space, a barber shop, restroom down in the kitchen on the first floor, and then a bedroom. We use the lower unit as a rotating exhibits. We'll do that. We'll put rotating exhibits up there. But we're still working on a plan, trying to get a business plan going, and I'll probably have to go and pay someone to write it for to tell us exactly what, even though our wish list is an Airbnb, either office space or either training center for the 8 rooms upstairs. But we gotta make sure we put something up there that kind of bring money in.
Right.
A lot of people say Airbnb would be the idea.
Right.
So, but then what about the off season? So it's gonna cost a lot of money. It's gonna cost about $1 million from what we estimated. We just this morning, we finally got the top on. We had the big a lot of the board members there and Landmarks people there. And we got the top, trusses.
Yes.
The contract just put the trusses on because we got work began already.
So the fact is that you bought this historic hotel, but it was in a state of disrepair. So it was sort of like good news, bad news. Congratulations. Now the work really begins.
Yes.
Because you got to restore this thing.
We're going to restore it, and we've already started to. We kicked it off. We got it this morning, showed the top. I guess within the next few days that they'll probably start putting the shank, they put the raft on it this morning.
And as you do that, are you subject then to those conditions and restrictions that historic societies will apply when it's an historic landmark? It has to be as authentic as possible, right? Or what are the constrictions you may have to deal
landmarks, with? Landmarks, tell me the landmarks. Preservation. They pull, there's a name they use, but they pull the dome knobs out of there, window ceilings, different things, frames to preserve, to go back into the building. We have to keep the exterior the same. We're taking a big sign down that says Imperial Hotel. It's been removed. We got it refurbished. It is back at the museum now. It's back at the museum. We just keep it there till we get it up, the building so we can put it back up and flash again. But yes, we got to follow those ground rules. We got to put the mainly the exterior have to remain the same.
Okay.
And we're looking for old pictures to make sure that
accurate.
Some pictures show they've been painted, and some show they sort of.
Do you have any folks that are volunteering their time that can help on that level with professional restoration? I mean, maybe architects or historians, contractors, those kind of folks.
Well, we have. Bill Evers and Charles Olson, architect, they've given us their bono time. They've done it free. They have our lead. People that really the director of the project. In other words, I go to them for guidance.
We
have a contract, the Cornerstone Builders. They're putting the roof on us for right now.
Wow.
And once we get the roof on, we got Dixon extermination. Mm-hmm. They're going to come in as Bono and do the and get the place where it kind of bummed out.
Yeah, it, right.
Termite infected from the yeah. damp weather. Get that squad away. And then we're going to start from there. We do by layer. We're going to start raising, kicking off big campaigns to raise money to start the renovation. By that time, we should have the plan put together. But before we really do the plan, we need to have something, you know, the business plan that would tell mm-hmm, our funders exactly mm-hmm. what we're going to do and how yep. much it's going to cost.
Yep. You need that prospectus.
Yeah. But I do have people that wants to volunteer, but not the kind of volunteer
not
they
at this
want.
Point.
They,
no, right.
They
yeah,
want to volunteer to come clean yet. Up, but we don't want to do that now because no. it still right. has a place right. to go in. But
yeah, we need to volunteer and help you raise the money. That's what we need to do. That's and how much do you know you need, or do
well,
you know?
It, the estimate from the architect, about $1 million is what it's going
to
take. Mm,
to put it all
to
back
put
together.
Put it all back together. Yeah. Put it all together. It's going to cost.
Yeah, that's chump change.
Gonna,
come on. $1 million
yeah,
bucks?
It's, yeah, it's,
in
yeah.
today's economy, man, that's that's nothing.
Excuse me.
We're spending that as we sit here. Folks, we got Jack Hadley in the studio. Fascinating guy. Somebody you want to get to know. And write him a check. Just, you know, because he needs your help. And we all do. We need to preserve this historic structure. The Imperial Hotel we're talking about up there in Thomasville. Part of the Tallahassee community, if you believe that. I do. Stay with me.
Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. That's the Merry Maid's way of keeping your home or office at its best. And it's what we have come to expect here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Our studios and offices always shine because Merry Maids makes the difference, like they do for hundreds of offices and homes in Tallahassee. They'll do just the same, just for you. And they're right here, giving back to our community and giving you extra benefits, like saving you up to $400 on your first cleaning by giving you extra service, and saving an extra 10% when you mention Tallahassee Talks. Their website makes it really easy for you, too. You can schedule a cleaning and make a payment with just a few clicks, any day, any time, day or night, when it's convenient for you. Call Merry Maids this week, 850-386-2205. That's 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're talking with Jack Hadley. You had your career in the military. How many years were you in the Air Force?
I spent 28 years and 14 days.
Right down to it.
Yes.
And had a wife and kids that during that time, and you served in Vietnam for a period of time.
Yes.
So you were, in genuine terms, you're a combat veteran and served the country well. You know, growing up in the South, and we will have to have you come back on the show and we can just talk at length about some of your personal history, family history, because mm-hmm. you got a lot of stories there. You still live in Thomasville.
Yes,
ma'am. And but you were born, reared in Thomasville. What was the name of the plantation?
I was, my dad I was born out on Pepper Hill Plantation, which is located 7 miles south of 319 south yeah. of Thomasville.
Yeah, Pebble Hill.
I was born there, and I'm the 10th child of 14 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And we have one sister passed and five brothers has passed. I'm the last one that's living. And my dad raised them all out there on the plantation. My dad worked out, his name was Kane Dennis Hadley. He worked out there for 53 years. He raised all his kids out there and sent them off to college. But one thing I did not realize, Mrs. Pansy Allen Pope, she was a benevolent person that helped the kids go off to college. It's just a matter of once you finish the seventh grade, and you know, transportation on Pepper Hill was very, we didn't have a problem there because one of my cousin, Mrs. Ruth Hadley, had a station wagon van, like truck van,
uh-huh.
that she picked the kids all up and took them to school for the next 40, 50 years, and then when she retired. So we always had transportation. So the kids out there had no excuse not to go to college and not to go to finish high school.
Mm.
So most of the kids on the plantation went off to college. You'd be surprised, you know, with the small salary my dad was working,
wow.
about $75 a month, but he survived. And we all survived.
And it was because she was putting up the money
to send them off
to school.
With the musical yeah. scholarship that my family's put music at Klein except myself. I look at pictures all day long, but they like music. And I like music too, but not to extent.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
But he raises and we all eventually moved into the city, but he continued to work out there.
Huh.
And then, of course, 2 weeks after I graduated, I went in the Air Force and stayed there for 28 years.
Right.
You thought when you joined the military, things would have changed, but mm-hmm. in the uniform is okay. But after you got in there, put that uniform on, it was the same. You know, and even back in the day, now, keep one thing in mind. I lived through the Dr. Martin Luther King period of time, but I was in the military.
Right, right.
You know, we could not get out in the streets and march, but I remember many days I just wished I could be part of that marching crew, but the military didn't tolerate that. Because you had your freedom in the military.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But then I reflect back when I said, okay, in high school, we had the same problem. You know, the principal would tell us that, Jack, I graduated when I was 20 years old because didn't do what I should have done when I was in grade school. The teacher kept me back. Mm-hmm. And I use that to tell kids today, you better study because the teacher will keep you back. but I came out at 20, but I was old enough to drive a school bus. And the principal would tell us, Jack, take the bus and go over to the other school and pick up all those books and bring them back. But we began to use books. And when I bought when we moved into the museum, the Douglas Complex, there was a whole warehouse full of nothing but old books.
Wow.
And I said, you know, these are the books we would have got. We would have got those used books in the back school.
Right.
But, you know, they was getting new books all along, giving us the old books. But I'm just saying, these are just little bits and pieces of that. You know, it never leaves you, I guess. But I use it, the healing is like the museum is a healing place. I use it to help heal myself and help heal my guest that comes to the museum.
Uh-huh.
You know, we got to talk about it.
And it's interesting that you take that position. Some would say, why do we even need to talk about the past? Let's just block it out of our minds, or let's get it out of our view. And your attitude is, no, let's talk about it.
Got to tell a story. You got to tell a story. I have a Jim Crow era there in the museum. People come there and say, why you have to do it? I said, because our kids need to know what this is all about. The school system teaches us a little bit in the classroom, but they need to see it on hand. I'm blessed that I got a grant. I've got two grants. I've got one grant in 2016 for $115,000 to hire a museum educator.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a follow-up again in 2018 to another grant to keep him another 3 years. So I have a total of 6 years to keep this young man there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's putting together a pilot program named Jamarcus Underwood, putting together a pilot program to take the museum to the classroom.
That's awesome.
To take those objects, Jim Crow objects, or civil rights objects, anything that kids can touch and feel about. The only thing I'm really looking for now, I got everything in the Jim Crow section, Confederate flag, the Jim Crow dolls, all the images. I need a cape and a hood. Then I can complete that Jim Crow section. And it's just the idea that it's part of being in the museum. You know, to help educate our people. I just want to educate our kids. Mm-hmm. I want to educate the community that it's okay. These things happen, but there's nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to forget that part of it. 400 years.
Yeah.
If we've been here 400 years on this earth, been 400 years in America.
Right.
We have helped build and shape this country. We've made a whole lot of inventions, scientists and doctors and lawyers, the whole works.
Right.
And we've done all these things. So we want to keep it going, but we need to know where we came from.
Yeah, and I think all of us need to know where we're going.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Folks, Jack Hadley, we're just getting started with this young man. He's got a lot to tell us, and I think you're going to find yourself not only being transported through time, but you're going to learn a whole lot about American history at large and a lot about local history and where we're going, where we're headed. Take it in. Make it part of your weekend. Get up there to Thomasville and check it out, the Jack Hadley Black History Museum. Founded and directed by the one and only Jack Hadley, our guest this morning. We're going to be looking for ways we can help you raise that $1 million you need for the Imperial Hotel restoration.
Well, let me see if
we can help you out with that, too.
Let me say this now. We're located at 214 Alexander Street. Here in Thomasville, Georgia, 31792.
Right.
But if I don't say this, I probably cannot get in my house when I go home. I am married to my wife for 62 years, Christine Jackson Hadley.
Smart man.
Who was born on Greenwood Plantation.
And that's also why you're still married, by the way.
Yeah, 62 years.
You're smart enough to do this.
I got three daughters, two daughters, and a son. My son, who Jim is 57 years old, 56 years old. My daughter is 57. My youngest daughter is 55. And I got five grands and one great grands. And all my five grands are all out of school. And just a great grand.
God bless you, man.
Years old. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I need to put that in there.
I love it. That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm bad about that stuff too. I never talk about the people that love me so much. But I'm glad you did, and I'm glad you were here, and I'm glad to be your friend. It's good to have a new friend in my life. And admire the work you're doing, and we believe in you, believe in what you're doing.
Appreciate it.
See if we can help you out. Folks, that's what we do here every week just for you, because it's part of what we are, telling you what Tallahassee is talking about this week. We are the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, online at moosemagnificat.com. Tallahassee's radio to the world, playing all local musicians their original songs. That is the sound of Tallahassee on moosemagnificat.com. I'll be looking for you next week, so come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me. Is there anything more Tallahassee than Tasty Pastry Bakery? More fresh, more original, more this is why I love this town, kind of delicious? I don't think so. You know, they've been in business since 1963, working through the night to be ready the next morning with muffins, coffee cakes, bread and pastries, and my personal favorite, fresh-made bagels and Lucky Goat coffee. Yeah, it helps get me out in the morning. And they deliver to the many restaurants, clubs, and coffee shops that serve their bread, muffins, and quiche. Never stuffy, never stale, just Tasty Pastry Good. It's the perfect blend of world-class talent, pure, simple ingredients, and down-home Tallahassee family tradition. Maybe they should call it Tasty Tally Bakery, but then why mess with something that's been working for 55 years? Yeah, you want something fresh and fantastic? There's a Tasty Pastry just waiting for you in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You want to know more? They're online at tastypastrybakery.com or call them at 893-3752.